Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, the Department of Defense. Let me welcome the Department of National Defense Force of South Africa. You are most welcome for this first on this fifth administration of fifth parliament. I think it's our first time to meet as a committee. You are most welcome. Without delaying, because today we're also expecting the Minister of Finance to address the nation. The meeting is officially open, but before I proceed, I would like to ask the members, because there is an agenda in front of us, if anyone should put anything in the agenda or adopt the agenda as it is. Can I put it in front of you, members? Can I adopt the agenda as it is, or you want to add something? Thank you. Honorable one. Thank you very much. Is there any seconder? Honorable Msanga. Thank you very much. Are there any apologies, Secretary, for this meeting?
Yes, Chair. Honorable Mukhetwa is attending the President Provincial address for that, this week. And Ms. Whittle, the researcher of the committee, on the reason of the Sherlock family.
Thank you very much, Secretary. Before we proceed also, because it's our first time to meet the Department of Defense, I think we need to introduce ourselves to the committee. I'll start from me. My name is Dumisani Kimbi, Chairperson of Security and Justice, Permanent Delegate from the Western Cape. Thank you very much. Order, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tamana Wantabia, Permanent Delegate from the Cape, serving in this committee. Thank you.
Good
morning, my name is Chad Mahadi. I'm presenting for the AMA committee.
Good morning. Kenna Halari Kumanupula, who's a full cup of the food.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tabu Sowana, the permanent delegate of the Eastern Cape, the province of Lesotho.
Yeah.
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Ronald Engelbrecht. I'm representing Housing on the
committee. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Mislakis. I'm a permanent delegate from the Free State.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Moses Seta Sunshanga from Mpumalanga. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll ask the leader of the delegation of Defence Force to introduce the chief. Sorry.
Before the introduction of the delegation from the department, I just want to check as to are we going to be addressed by officials alone? Indication as to where is the minister? I'm not sure. Maybe I don't see correctly. We must have an indication as to where is the minister, and if ever she has some commitments, where is the deputy minister to that before we can continue.
Thank you. Well, just introducing our specific introduction, I think the delegation will answer the question. Thank you.
But Chair, we have done the part of apology. I should think that something must come up from that before they introduce themselves. They Hahuna Minister nor Deputy Minister. We need an indication before they can introduce themselves. Firstly, we must be a political person before the officials. I don't know protocol. If it is that, and then officials will then deal with the matters of operation. Thank you,
Honourable Member. I thought that the head of delegation will address us about that. Maybe they have got an answer. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, members. Good morning. My name is Dr. Sidile Gamede. I'm the Chief of Defense Strategic Policy and Planning, DDG, in the Department of Defense. I report to the Secretary for Defense. I've been requested by him to first apologize on his behalf because he's engaged with the minister this morning. He might be joining us later if he finishes that side. I wasn't informed of whether the minister would be joining us or not. But we are ready to make a presentation. The team that you see before you is the team that works on the implementation of the defense review. Some of the members did work with the committee that was actually working on the defense review. But we are able to answer all your questions as far as the defense review is concerned today. Thank you.
Thank you. Can you introduce your team or they can introduce themselves?
I'll ask them to introduce themselves so that you hear their voices.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's touch. Thank you.
I think, yes, we will therefore take note of what is the Secretary is saying. But there will be political questions then, how do we cross that point? Because here we're situated politicians, and within the defense review issues, there can be issues of tariffs in terms of political matters. How do we cross that point? Thank you.
Honourable members, I think we heard from the head of delegation, he's not aware about where the whereabouts of the minister and the deputy minister. I think as a politician, it's our duty to take that thing up. But the officials are here for the review. But if any questions need a political thing, we'll take that to the minister. The minister is not here. We'll take a decision up, but the officials are here. Thank you. Honorable Mukhara.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable Chairperson, can we just get an indication at least of whether the Honourable Minister or Deputy Minister was invited to this meeting? If they weren't invited, then it's a different story. But if they were invited, then we just want to take note of that fact. You will remember that yesterday in the questions to the Minister, I actually expressed my absolute pleasure at seeing her for the first time in quite a few years. So I would just like to know whether she has been invited. If she hasn't been invited, then we're actually blaming her unnecessarily, because then she wouldn't have known about this. Can we just get an indication whether the minister or the deputy minister or any political figure has been invited to this meeting?
Thank you. I'm sure the minister was invited. I signed it. I'll come back to you.
I've just requested our parliamentary officer to try and call the minister's office, so he can he'll come with the answer now.
The answer.
Yes.
Okay. It's not yet. Yes.
Now that you have indicated to us that the invitation is direct to the office of the minister, I want us to put it on record that we are not satisfied in the manner in which the Ministry of Defense is conducting itself towards the committee. I don't know, maybe she did attend one committee meeting or what, but it's a dissatisfaction from our side, especially from my side, as a member that we will forever be addressed by officials. We are politicians. Officials are mandated to do what politicians have resolved. And if politicians are not here to clarify us on other political matters and on the mandate given to them as politicians, we will be unable to hold these officials accountable. The person that we must report to us, that we have the authority to hold accountable, is an executive, which is the minister. So the officials will just do their work as mandated and will leave. And if we ask questions, they will answer our questions as per their role, key performance areas, not political. So it must be stated clear that we are not satisfied. We are not happy in the manner in which the ministry, the head of delegation doesn't even know where the minister is. She doesn't even know the whereabouts, even though she knows where she is. She doesn't even know whether the minister was invited or not. That is a sign of disrespect, Honorable Chair. It must be noted as such. We are not happy. I raised this thing long. I think it was in October when there was a presentation in the very same room. I don't remember the date correctly. I raised this concern. I am raising it again. Honorable Michalakas yesterday in the plenary raised the concern, and the response of the minister, you could hear that it was like she's undermining the request by the honorable member. Thank you.
Point is taken, honorable member. Honorable one.
Chairperson, I rise to appeal to all of us in this house and in this meeting. Although I'm not supposed to be, because I'm not an official, in my own understanding as the procedure, today is a cabinet meeting. I'm not saying the concern that has been raised by my co-fellow members of the parliament are wrong, but I'm standing on behalf of the things that are of the schedule. Although today is Wednesday and this preparation of the budget, I can say all the ministers, I'm sure they are there. But what has been said by Honorable Mukwili can be part of the written paragraph, and what is said by Honorable Michalakis also can be part of the paragraph on a written response saying how are we feeling. But in my own understanding, I thought the leader of the delegation would highlight that Wednesdays are the cabinet meetings. So they are expected, more especially when we are talking about the today's date and the budget. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Let me, because I stopped the chief of the... sorry.
Thank you very much. The matter that is raised by Honourable Wana is unacceptable. Because the date, we were supposed to meet with the committee last week. The date was rescheduled to today, meaning whoever that is supposed to be here, the matter was properly communicated to them. So there is no excuse that the cabinet sits. If you do your planning properly, you will know where you need it and when you are needed. And for the reschedule of this presentation was because of maybe because of by then the minister was not available or whatever reason that made us to reschedule the meeting for today. So
thank you.
As an excuse, if the executive, if we have to hold the executive accountable, the executive must make sure that it presents itself in front of us so that we are there and she is there and we interact
properly. Point taken. Thank you very much, Mr. Chief.
Chief, all I can say is that we apologize as the department officials,
and that the sector is going to be joining.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Can you introduce yourself and your topic?
I'm going to join the Secretary for Defense.
For Defense.
Is going to join the presentation. From you can join the presentation towards the end of the presentation. Because this is what was it's very important. Like you said, it's for the first time coming for them to present it. And this review is very important. It was contested and a money to me. It can't be that the first presentation is presented to us by junior. Because the secretary was supposed to be, he's supposed to be the leader of the I'm not taking anything offense from the delegation we were here, but as a head supposed to be here, the secretary is supposed to be making presentations to us. But what about what the minister is absent in the approval of the minister? And it's important because at least the secretary is supposed to be present. It can't be the both of them as a head of they are not present. It's very I'm not really happy for the secretary. You say he's going to join us. We're not even being briefed properly. After 5 minutes or 10 minutes is on his way. What happened? What makes him feel well, not to be present, especially in the time that meeting started, to be present in this meeting. I'm making a thing before we proceed, that response can be given, given to us before we can
okay, thank you very much. If I remember, the chief said the secretary is with the minister and is coming, is after I finish with the minister, he will be here, he will be joining. Sorry? No, I said the chief said the secretary is discussing something important with the minister. After that, he will come and join us. Thank you. Actually, the thing is noted. Everything is noted. Honourable member, can you proceed?
Thank you, Chair. I will request my delegation to introduce themselves, the members of the delegation, starting from my left. Thank you.
Chairperson, honourable members, I am Major General Kurani Michael Ramaswana, Chief Military Policy Strategy and Planning. Thank you.
Chairperson, honourable members, my name is Brigadier General John Gibbs. I am a member of the Implementation Project Team.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Tendai Kuchena, Head of Research and Policy in the Ministry of Defence and Military Affairs.
Good morning, Chairperson and members, honourable members. I'm Brigadier General Lewis Gardner. I'm a Director of Military Strategy of the SNGA.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Nick Sengel, and my post is Chief Director for Defence Policy. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Commission members. My name is Dumisani Lata. I am Chief Director for Strategic Planning in the Department. Thank you.
Chair, my name is Peter Lamini, I'm Head of Communication for the Department of Defense.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Peter Gabinde, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, MOD.
Good morning, my name is Rachel Marin, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, DOG.
Thank you very much. This is our official, Frontier, and Architect. Thank you very much. Yes, we have to know everybody here. I know our official. Can you come and introduce yourself? Okay, the news is there.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Chris Makotiti. I sit CLO.
Morning, Chair. I'm Calvin Mangani, the Content Advisor for Joint Standing Commission on Defense.
Secretary, I'm Vlalem Sandrainsburg. I'm the researcher for the Joint Standing Committee on Defense.
No, thank you very much.
KPMG.
KPMG. SAPC, for example. That's good. It's good to know who in the zoo. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to ask the Department of Defense to proceed with the briefing of the committee on the 2014 Defense Review. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We now call it the 2015 because it was passed in 2015, and we are busy now with the placing process, and it will indicate a defense of 2015. Chair, we are going to give you a brief presentation. It's not going to be long so that we allow enough time for questions. We are going to cover the general introduction, what is the development trajectory. We're going to brief you on funding, and we are going to also indicate what are the principles that we have used to identify the deliverables that will go into the 2016-2017 ATP. Because according to our plans, we are beginning the formal implementation in 2016-2017. And then we will then hear from you after that in the form of a discussion. I will request Mr. Ladla, Chief Director, Strategic Management, to go through the presentation for us then, with your permission. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
So thank you, Chair, Mr. Director. I will proceed to the presentation. the Chair has indicated by the head of delegation of the Department of Defense, we have this presentation to make over here, and committee members, I suppose, will have the copies of the presentation. Chair, our intention of coming over here, as directed by the committee, is to provide some information brief to this committee about the progress we are making in the implementation of the Defence Review as adopted by Parliament last year. As the introduction, Chairperson, we are firstly noting the fact that last year in 2014, or the year before last year, the State of the Nation Address of the President confirmed that Defence Department current commitment will continue, and there is a requirement for the country to find sufficient resources to fund the Defence Review, which is the current latest defense policy of the department. But at the same time, we are recognizing the Minister of Defense's budget vote, which happened in 2014 and 15, wherein the Minister of Defense, therefore, in line with the provisions of the defense review, has identified certain areas as domains that are the basis of her priorities for last year and the years that will come afterwards. But she identified, therefore, basically about quite a number of priorities, and we are identifying some of them over there. The issue of strategic leadership is one priority that the minister has, which seeks to ensure that the department is basically improving its strategic leadership to ensure that we're able to respond to the requirements placed before ourselves. The second one is in relation to the funding model of Defense Department. It's a point that I'm going to develop further in the subsequent slide, because it's about Defense Department finding a mechanism of getting sufficient resources to execute its function. And that will be driven through the funding model as set up as a priority of the minister. The third priority that the minister identified is in relation to personnel renewal. Defense Department is basically an organization that is heavy on personnel, and there's a requirement for Defense Department from time to time, particularly the SAND, to renew itself for the future, because the operations undertaken by this personnel are such that they can be quite demanding, and you want to have some renewal all the time. The issue, another priority, is in relation to organizational renewal, which is actually a review of the structure of Defense Department to ensure that it gives expression to the current requirements. Capability renewal is another one. And therefore, in our understanding, or in our conception, capability renewal in our instance is about the whole issue of ensuring that the equipment portfolio that we have is renewed to be able to help us to execute the missions that are ordered against us by those who commit the defense force. So the capabilities that we use, the equipment, should be of such a nature that we should be able to execute our operations correctly. The defense industry is another priority that we have to ensure that we are supported by the industry in terms of technology and the repair of the equipment. Defense commitment here is a priority. It actually talks about all the commitments that Defense Department runs. And we are saying over here as a priority, Defense Department needs to be able to execute its current commitments correctly and be able, therefore, to have sufficient platform to execute further operations or commitments as directed by government. But that is predicated on the understanding that sufficient resources are extended to the Defense Department. These are priorities, Chair, that were identified by the Minister in the budget vote as said in the media plan. Chair, you will know that last year we took the defense review through the parliamentary process. It was adopted, therefore, by the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces in June, as well as in the month of June, different dates, respectively. And to us, that basically said that there is an adoption, therefore, of this defense policy as defense policy for the country, as endorsed by government. We have therefore subsequently to that established within Defense Department implementation teams to oversee the implementation of the defense review, understanding its importance to ourselves. And with regard to that, one of the important things in defense review implementation that we take very seriously is to ensure that the rollout of the defense review must be in line with the government planning processes, one, and secondly, in line with government budgeting processes. So that which we do as part of defense review implementation should be consistent with those national government processes of planning as well as budgeting. But you have to ensure, therefore, that you adopt an approach that will ensure the programmatic implementation of the defense review. And that is what, therefore, we did with regards to establishing the framework for the implementation of the defense review. But Chair, I think committee members and everyone else might have read the defense review. It sets out about 5 milestones, and these are planning milestones. These are milestones that defense review says shall be pursued by the department over a period of time. They are therefore categorized into about 5 milestones. One is about arresting decline. What we mean by arresting decline, we accept that currently the defense department capabilities are in a state of decline, serious state of decline. And there's a requirement for the country through Defense Department to arrest that decline. Because if these capabilities continue to decline in the manner that they are currently, there will be a challenge about Defense Force executing future commitments. Because you can only do so if your capabilities are at the level that is required for the missions that you seek. So with regard to milestone one, we are saying therefore, before you can do anything else, it's important that you arrest the decline, meaning you do not want it to continue further. Because if it does, therefore it will take you a long time to basically come out of the decline. And secondly, your operations as it were will be affected. But once you have arrested decline, in milestone number 2, we are talking about the rebalancing therefore of the force, meaning once you have arrested the decline, you begin therefore to rebalance to ensure that you are beginning to have a balanced force that will be able to move to the future. But when you're capacitating the force, you are actually increasing its capacity from the current capacity that you have. And that is very key, Chair, because Defense Department, if you look at the kind of operations and functions that it has executed, it has continued to increase over time without necessarily the capacity of Defense Department being increased simultaneously with that. So it's important that Defense Department is capacitated sufficiently through a deliberate intervention to ensure, therefore, that it is able to execute and run a portfolio of capabilities consistent with that. So with regard to milestone 3, which is capacitate the force, that is what we are talking about. Responding to challenges, that is what we shall be doing. There's quite a number of challenges that we have. And as milestone number 4, we seek therefore to have sufficient capacity to respond to all those particular challenges. What is key, Chair, though, is that we are not going to have all these things happening all at once. This, as determined by Cabinet and endorsed by Parliament, this could be a 20 to 30 year project. And we have to be very considered in how we roll out the various milestones in the 20 or 30 or 30 year period, starting with the arresting of the decline, which we estimate roughly to be a process that will take about 5 years. on the assumption that within the 5 years there will be sufficient resources extended to Defense Department. If the money that we have, resources, are not increased, therefore the arresting of the decline may take a period longer than 5 years. So the assumption that we're making is an assumption of an extension of our resource Defense Department within that period of time to be able to decline and subsequently carry out the other milestones. Here we are pointing out here the various milestones in a diagrammatic process. But what is key, and is a point that I've made already, if you look at this diagram, it's a tragic that Defense Department must appear. We are currently in this particular situation, and it's important for us to be able to arrest the decline, because if we don't, this is likely to continue like that. And if it continues to decline in the manner that I've indicated, to actually take it up to that particular level, it will take firstly a long, long time, and secondly, it will demand a whole lot of resources. So for us, arresting decline is very key as a precondition of the subsequent milestone. And the other one of our rebalancing happens over here, capacitate over here, to respond to challenges. It is our desired end state to achieve this particular milestone. We accept, though, that the issue of time is affected here, and we shall, therefore, at some point get to that point, on the support that we get from Parliament and other stakeholders critical to this process. Chair, I'm identifying here as a department, identifying increased success factors for this particular trajectory. There are things that are very key for us to obtain before we can proceed with this successfully. We are noting the ones that are in black are basically the ones that have been achieved already. That Parliament has endorsed the defense review. That is done. The issue of our directed by the Commander-in-Chief through Cabinet, the President has directed the level of ambition that we seek to have over here. That has been obtained. Cabinet has been supported. I think that is spoken about. National consensus has been achieved on the defense review. I am saying so because Parliament is there, for that is through the Parliament process that the national consensus on defense has been achieved. The issue of our command-driven, that we have realized, interactive timeline, we've done that, we've done all of that. But what is outstanding for us to be able to realize this fully is basically the issue of appropriate funding of Defense Department. And I've made that point several times now, that everything else is dependent on extension of sufficient resources to Defense Department to pursue this trajectory. And the other one is about strategic partners. We identify quite a number of stakeholders as key to us realizing the trajectory. And Parliament is but one stakeholder, and others. And to us, the alignment and the concept of effort of all the partners in support of the defense strategy is absolutely key, and we identify it as a success factor. Just to touch a bit without much detail on milestone one, I think we've talked about that. We intend to have a milestone one plan, which is a plan that will set out in detail how we seek to go about arresting the decline. There is a deliberate action that we have, but it identifies two aspects. Firstly, is that your intervention towards arresting decline are categorized into two. One, it's about minimal cost-driven interventions. Those are interventions that we'll carry out, which are not financially intensive. But the second aspect of it are those which are cost-driven. There you require added funding for you to be able to carry that. But milestone one focus is to ensure that we execute our current commitment excellently. That is what the focus of milestone one is. But for us to be able to conduct our current commitment excellently, we therefore require resources, we require the necessary framework of policy and other measures. But lastly, we require a retention of the capacities and capabilities that we have to the level of our commitment. In 2015-16, we have identified that year as a year of planning. That is why we are planning. But the year of implementation starts on the first of April 2016. 16-17 is the first year of our implementation of the defense review with respect to milestone one. And we have taken the deliverables to be executed within 16-17 financial year into the APP. We shall be taping before Parliament the annual performance plan of Defense Department. And within that APP of Defense Department for the year ahead, It shall have a set of deliverables that Defense Department shall deliver in the year ahead. And those are part of largely the minimum cost-driven interventions. And in the subsequent years, you shall therefore see other interventions to mountain. But in the year ahead, which is the first year of implementation of the defense review, we shall have those particular deliverables, a package of them, as part of the defense review. But the costing of the defense review in its entirety, of milestone one in its entirety, we hope therefore to have that done by April, May this year. Because we need to be able to say to Parliament and say to Treasury and say to all our stakeholders, the cost of implementing defense review milestone one is X rank. And for us to get to that X rank, we've got to be able to make a proper assessment of the areas that we need to intervene in, the cost of those particular areas, the time it will take, and all of that. And therefore conclude on the cost of milestone one. We are currently in chamber working on those matters. We hope to have the costed plan of milestone one, arresting decline, on the table by March, April this year. But the importance of that plan, Chair, if I may indicate, is absolutely key because that will form the basis of our engagement with our stakeholders, including Treasury, including all other parties, because we shall not be estimating the cost of milestone one, but we shall be saying it costs about X. So that if we get a budget, we can tell you what we can do and what we cannot do, because we'll be certain at that point of the cost of our defense review, milestone one. The funding of the defense review, I think, is the point that would form part of the discussion that we shall have. Thank you, Chair. The funding of the defense review is central to the whole defense review rollout or implementation. Defense Department accepts and we realize that the objectives and all the intentions, good intentions of the defense review milestones, as indicated earlier, are actually dependent on us getting adequate defense funding. And we have said in the past that the current defense budget allocation is actually less than the demands that we have within defense departments. And that hence, therefore, the decline of our capabilities. That's why in the second bullet over here we said, if sufficient defense funding is not obtained, the implication of it is that the defense trajectory that we seek to pursue in terms of the milestone will not be realized, will not be reached. And the consequences are that the decline of the capabilities will continue up to the point where they will become totally unfeasible to run. And we accept as the Defense Department that the situation currently, economic and otherwise, is very unfavorable. We therefore know that for us to be able to get out of this situation, we require support from quite a number of stakeholders. And one stakeholder in this instance is Parliament and other stakeholders, but Parliament will play a very key role in ensuring that Defense Department funding is raised to the level that is basically required. But at the same time, understanding the current economic situation, Defense Department, we understand that the national fiscal is under pressure. The budget speech today will be indicating the pressure that there is on the national fiscal. And we are not, as Defense Department, optimistic that we shall get additional funding from the national fiscal. And as such, we are looking at other sources of revenue outside of the traditional defense appropriation as set out by Treasury. We would want to get into a situation where we are able to leverage non-traditional sources of revenue. I mean, in addition to the defense budget we get from National Treasury, we need to look at other ways of galvanizing resources from other areas, which together will therefore help us to realize the budget that we basically require. the Minister of Defense, therefore, has directed in her priorities that we need to have a funding model. What lies at the heart of the funding model is a requirement for Defense Department to be able to identify all these possible streams of revenue and therefore begin to appreciate the extent of each revenue and the time by which each of the revenue streams will be reached. And once we have done that, therefore it becomes the function of managing the model over time. But it's important for us to have a funding model that seeks to speak to these particular matters. The accounting office and the Secretary for Defense is under instruction to look at that. And currently, we have also called into the party, Arms Corps, who is part of the agent of Defense Department, to look at some of the interventions. As an example, and I'm saying this is but one of many that we're looking at. One of the options is to look at possibly looking at the disposal of non-core assets of Defense Department. Because if we do dispose of those non-core, and I'm using the word non-core advisedly, non-core, therefore there will be revenue that you can get from there. Whether it's assets, whether it's buildings, whether it's this and that and the other. But we need to look at all those kind of things. But in the course of doing that, we shall do it in a manner that does not compromise the mandate that Defense Department stands for. That is why the issue of non-core becomes essential. But the core assets will remain central because they are part of the capabilities required to execute the defense mandate as basically required. We shall, therefore, the commitment that we have made, when we shall make through the ACP, is that we shall keep Parliament informed about the progress we're making with regards to each of the funding model. But we require, as a stakeholder, a commitment and agreement between ourselves and Treasury on how best we can have certain exemptions around the non-core asset sale, the revenue. Because as you know, currently, if you are selling an asset of the state, the money accrues to the national system. And it's important, therefore, that we get into an arrangement with Treasury to say, if money is raised out of the state of a defense property or asset, that should accrue to Defense Department to supplement its budget, as opposed to it going to the national system. So if it does that, therefore, it undermines the whole purpose of the funding model as it is conceptualized by ourselves. The approach to planning, I think we've made this point a few, 2015 was the year of planning and we have gone past that. And we've looked at quite a number of logical ways of implementing the defense review. And some aspects have indicated already. Instructions in the Defense Department are given us. We are an instruction-driven department and to us instructions are very essential. We have appointed respective teams to look at quite a number of work packages. But what I need to therefore to say is that the milestone, it's important for us to be able to say that. Arresting the decline is one milestone, but the success of milestone one is actually the foundation of milestone number two right after four. As you are implementing milestone one, you are actually running it concurrently with milestone number two right after four. Because the two, there's a concurrent approach that we have, joint focus, and ensuring that there's always simultaneousness in the execution of these milestones because they feed from each other. So milestone one goes, but alongside it runs a milestone two because it will build as a foundation on milestone number one. Okay, in summary, without spending time on this, we have just pointed out here the various milestones as indicated, and we're anticipating that this will run over a period of time, could be 20, 30 years, depending on money. But we are saying that for arresting decline is the first milestone over here. The plan for that will be done by after 2016, and once you are executing this particular milestone, you are also starting to have a foundation for the other milestones. And the plan for the entire defense review implementation will be done by April next year. And we're saying that deliberately because we need to be able to cost each milestone accordingly and give value to it and add up all these values into a plan. So that when we come and say, what is the cost of the defense review? We can give you the total cost of the defense review implementation one and give you the broken down cost of each and every milestone that we shall do. And on the basis of that, depending on the funding that we get, we can therefore say, within each milestone, how do we therefore conduct our interventions, and how do we move left or right in terms of timing, depending on the availability of our hospital. But as we implement all these milestones, we shall be guided, we shall provide reports to Parliament, to all our stakeholders, as required by law in some instances. We have spoken, Jay, about milestone one, the issue of the concurrent and approach and related matters, and how it's important it is to put them into categories of cost-driven and non-cost cost-driven, which points, therefore, have indicated. But in the ACP that we shall have very soon, under the performance plan, it contains largely the non-cost-driven or minimum cost-driven interventions, because we are still feeding from the current financial baseline. The financial baseline we have has not changed, and we are hoping for a changed financial baseline. But the current financial baseline is a constrained one, and the constraints that we have only say you can only conduct interventions which are not heavy on finance. That is why, therefore, that's what informs milestone one, minimum cost-driven interventions as set up over there. But at the level of cost-driven, we shall therefore be looking for any finance, either through increased defense appropriation or alternatively through the revenue stream as galvanized through the funding model that I referred to earlier. This is another representation of the aspect that I've covered. But safe to say over here that milestone number one, if you take milestone one as it was, what informs milestone one is the desire and the ambition to ensure that you execute your current commitment correctly. By current commitment, we refer to the following. I think it's important that I expand on that. Defense Department's current commitment refers to the following aspects. You need to be able to continue with the current work that you do as a defense force. You need to be able to remain on border safeguarding. You need to be able to remain on peacekeeping missions, on support to the police, on support to any other initiatives, on rescue operations, and all of those. Those are your current commitments. And it's important that it's part of Milestone 1 that firstly, you continue to execute those correctly on the basis of capabilities as well. But subsequently, your baseline may therefore increase. Chair, we have discussed the issue of milestone number two right up to four. All that we are saying, therefore, milestone two is about the capacitating, the rebalancing, capacitating, as well as responding to challenges. This actually indicates in summary what will happen, what will take you from milestone number one to right to milestone number four. What will take you there are these key aspects. We need to be able to have a defense and accountability and command relations policy. We should ensure that we set up a good framework of our command and accounting. We have said that defense departs for two roles. There's an issue of accounting government. There's an issue of command of the force, which is done by the chief of the FNDL. But there is a point of convergence, and that point of convergence is the function of that particular model we talked about. Military strategy is a matter that is key, because on the basis of the ambition set by the president through the defense review, you need to say, how do you realize that? What is the strategy that you adopt, the options, and which one? Because on the basis of that, you shall have a force design infrastructure. Structures you have, the design you have, and the capabilities that you shall have to execute that. And we are talking over here about the resource plan, which is supportive of all these other work. The issue of the funding model I've spoken about. So I will move Defense Department from milestone number one to there is largely the execution of this one with a view of getting added finance from either Treasury or through the alternative sources of revenue as indicated earlier. The detail around that will come at the right time, but now safe to talk in general sense. This is basically what defense review is about and how we intend to go about implementing it. The rest of the slides that I will have now are measures that Defense Department is currently doing, but these are measures that we are reading against the defense review. These are measures important currently, but they can be seen as achievements that we have realized in the interim, as things that are contributing towards the defense review. With regard to strategic leadership, I've indicated that we are currently having a course being developed at the Defense College, which is where the military officers go through for their training, and that needs to be offered at the master's level, because the military training has got to be recognized in academic terms. For us to be able to say our forces or our officers can actually stand shoulder to shoulder with their counterparts from the academic routine of life as it were. But this, therefore, seeks to do that. We have reworked the officer development part, which is the point I've referred to now, as well as that of the non-commissioned officers. But we're expanding at the same time the military academy's capacity, moving it from being a military academy, by the way, migrating towards a defense academy. The difference between the two, military academy is largely focused on military, but defense academy will be much more broader than that, because military is basically a subset of the word that defense in terms of nomenclature. So once we have a defense college or an academy that covers more than just the traditional military training courses. Cyber strategy, sure you will know, we are currently in a cyber space, and we need to be able to develop the strategies to ensure that we respond to the threat around that. The strategy is underway to do that. The training of our reserve force recruits in the university is currently going on. We have been on quite a number of campuses, seeking to recruit the young and the educated to be part of the defense force, because it's part of the agenda that defense department have, that you need to have officers as well as personnel in defense department who are educated, who can actually be able to deliver and execute those functions that are affecting themselves. The equal testing of career is a matter that we are working at. With regards to personnel specifically, we are noting here that we are looking at a charter. We have developed a charter. Charter to us set up the principles to be pursued by Defense Department in ensuring that it becomes a professional defense force. That's what the charter therefore looks at. But the issue of this mechanism, I think it's a matter that the Parliament, various committees of Parliament would look at at some point. I've spoken earlier about the issue of renewal of the personal defense force, but as we renew, you must be able to have a mechanism of exiting those that are no longer fitting the profile of your desired personnel. So the exit mechanism is something that we're looking at to ensure that we exit humanely and with respect those officers and NCOs who have served the department over time, and are able to exit them in a manner that would ensure that we demonstrate the regard that we have for the contribution that we have. But the discussion, therefore, between Treasury, DPSA, and ourselves is underway around that particular mechanism. Training of personnel in various mastering is going on, but we intend to have our officers and our soldiers being trained beyond this country. They should be able to be exposed to international thinking around quite a number of things, and especially therefore, Cuba, as an example, Russia, China, and many other countries are part of arrangements that we have of exchanging students as well as the military officers. At the level of our organization, Chair, I think what is key for me in summary to indicate over here is the whole issue of the military strategy that we are currently looking at. And the rest of other items are just work that I've already discussed in my earlier slides about project teams, about the sequencing of activities. We've spoken about that. But what I'm recognizing here is particularly the issue of the importance of the military strategy, one, as well as how critical that is as a basis of force structure and force design, or force design and force structure, as it were. The issue of simulation, as there are testing of combat equipment and configuration is currently going on underway. R&D in defense is necessarily an important part. At the level of the defense industry, the military advantage and competitiveness of defense department lies on firstly having the top of the latest technology, the AS1, but two, with a reliable defense industry that can be able to support you at the time of need. You may not have all the capabilities within yourself, but at the time of need, you must be able to get them from the defense industry. So that's why the defense industry is absolutely key in ensuring that Defense Department is sustained over time and it continues to operate successfully its mission as it has done in the past. The issue of Bahamas therefore becomes very key because it's part of that particular process, and we are working very closely to ensure that the acquisition process of defense equipment is actually accelerated to the level of being able to deliver the required equipment at the time that it is required. Chair, the next slide is about capability renewal. I think I've spoken about that, how the equipment needs to be able to do. But Operation Tucano, but I think maybe for a minute, I need to speak about Operation Tucano. It has been spoken about in quite a number of areas, quarters. But Operation Tucano is actually an operation that the Defense Department is currently running with a view of attending to the repair and maintenance of equipment. Because if you are to renew your equipment, you renew them by ensuring that your equipment that you currently have, it may be the best one, but it requires constant repair and maintenance. And if you don't attend to that, so the equipment declines into junk. And we are not wishing therefore to keep our equipment at a junk status as it is. So the issue of repair and maintenance of this is key. So Operation Tucano is actually aimed at trying to attend to that at a less cost than before, because the maintenance of equipment is quite expensive. And Operation Tucano therefore helps us to ensure that the ambulances are attended to, and the issue of operational vehicles is done. But once it is running, there's an issue of skills transfer to ensure that while Operation Tucano is running, there is an impact, there is a transfer of skills between the Cubans who are part of Operation Tucano to the South Africans who shall in the future be able to execute that without assistance from others, because the issue of skills has made it defined as but one of the aspects which is critical to the sustainment of our defense. The issue of doctrine, Chair, I think a matter that we deal with all the time, but it's more of a domestic matter which we don't wish to bore you about. But to us, the issue of doctrine is key to ensure that we support the trajectory that we seek to have as defense department. The issue of facilities, Chair, is a matter that probably, given the fact that we are addressing the NCOP, we've got our facilities portfolio spread across the length and breadth of the country. And we could facilitate a footprint across the country. And to us, it's important to ensure that though that facility is kept at the right level and is able, therefore, to indirectly make contributions towards the localities where they are basically located. But that is a matter that we may not be able to exhaustively address now. Because, Chair, if you are doing the military strategy, you shall have a force design and force structure. And force design and force structure will indicate to you what are the strategic positioning that you need to adopt for military capabilities to be able to respond to threats that you would have assessed to your estimate. And on the basis of that assessment, you can never be able to say, our footprint would be 10 feet into that area or heavier in that area. So that's what we are talking about under the issue of facilities. But the dockyard is one example here in Cape Town. The dockyard was in the hands of our arms for a moment, but it's been taken back to the Navy because we think it can best function under the authority or under the concerned issue for the Navy. The naval base 7 is being translated into a base. There was a station, but we want to make it a base given the activity that there is in Germany, and we need to have a base to be able to be helpful to us, the military, but at the same time be able to provide the necessary deterrent to the operations happening in Germany from a commercial side, of things. The consolidation of our commission, we accept that our facilities may not always be maintained by other people from outside. We need to create an inside, in-house capability, and web commission is aimed at doing that. Capability to respond to your own repair and maintenance aspects. As these things happen. Technology, I've spoken about previously, and but we're saying we recognize the technology as key, as a force multiplier. Meaning with technology, you can have a better ratio than you would have if you were to operate without the technology. Chair, in conclusion, therefore, yeah, it's a matter that we raised with information. We've been to the Portfolio Committee on Defense here in November last year and presented a similar presentation. And we therefore gotten some support from the PCD with respect to the matters indicated here. Firstly, in terms of the approach that we adopt in terms of defensive implementation. Secondly, the delineation that we are making between cost and non-cost driven aspects and how we seek to deal with those. And the issue of ensuring that we have deliverables contained in the ACP 2016-17 as the first shot towards the milestone one implementation. And the issue of alternative sources of revenue. I think there is a support that we've gotten from PCD from that. And we just wish to raise that over here. And AMCO, as part of the defense funding model rollout, they therefore would attend to certain measures. And the AMCO's intervention was taken there. But we are looking at it as a first order funding intervention. There were quite a number of others coming. But in the first instance, that is what we shall be doing. And Chair, the issue of arresting the decline is critical. And we are saying here, if you are to arrest decline, you can only do so by actually ensuring that there's an extension of ADS funding from the Defense Department. That is but one of the key ways through which you can address that. And because if you don't have that, so what you shall have, therefore, you shall have the less optimal option for defense review milestone one. But we want to have the most optimal one. But with less funding, we may have something less of that. Chair, in summary, these are matters that we are raising as matters from PCD, but as part of matters that we are doing as Defense Department, as short-term achievements of defense review. Chair, that brings me to the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for this briefing. Honourable Member, or do you want to add, Chief? Is there anything that I want to add before?
I'm not sure. We'll take questions from you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Member, clarity or questions? Honourable Sota, noted. Honourable Mchanga. Yes, can I get that? You're not
yet. I'm not sure what came out when you said my surname just now, but I'm getting used to it. Chairperson, my questions are actually for the Minister, but unfortunately, as we know, she's not here again. So my first question would have been, I would understand if you can't answer that. Today is the budget day, and as we know, increased funding for the defense review goes to the core of the effectiveness of rolling the whole defense review out. So my first question to the Minister would have been if she has consulted with the Minister of Finance to discuss this matter so that we can ensure that what should be a five-year phase should not become a 10-year phase. I'm not sure whether that question can be answered by the officials present, but if it's not possible, then I will submit to the Minister herself. My other question is, if you go to the slide, page 15, specifically the training of own personnel in specific musterings in countries abroad, such as Cuba, Russia, and China.
Slide 15, not page.
It starts with some short-term achievements. The last point is the training of own personnel in specific musterings in countries abroad such as Cuba, Russia and China. I had an oral question for the Minister yesterday about our pilots also being trained in some of these countries. My question is, how did we go about selecting the countries that we work with in terms of this? Was it a political decision? If it was not a political decision, but it was, in fact, a strategic decision, then I would like to know the reasoning behind selecting those specific countries. Because at this stage, I'm finding it very difficult to believe that Cubans can teach South Africans, who built and designed our own airplanes a few years ago still, that Cubans can actually teach us something about fixing and flying an airplane. How did we go about choosing Cuba, Russia, and China? Was it a political decision? And if it wasn't a political decision, what is the strategic reasoning behind selecting those countries and not countries that are actually world leaders in those specific fields? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mtlanga. You take note of everything. Eh?
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps we should say, because the last speaker, Honorable George, has made mention of this, that today will be the Minister of Finance will be with us to give us the national budget. Now the question will be, actually I'm asking myself, we were presenting that most of the plans will be finished on April. And in most of your cost analysis in terms of your design, you'll also conclude with them on April. Now I am really can't understand how then this defense review be budgeted for. So the question will be what budget has been set aside for implementation of the milestone? What are the time frame and how will this be phased in? To be question number one. Number two, what training will be conducted with staff to ensure successful implementation? On your design issues, you have to take us into confidence as this parliament. Because when you talk of design, it's more broader. There are many activities that are being executed by defense. Which areas do we have serious declines that we need to focus on? And I heard that you were speaking of some streams that you need to identify in terms of the funding process. Can you take us into confidence, perhaps, what are those streams? For the knowledge, because we must be informed of whatever that is going to take place. We must, of course, again vote for this budget, for this defense review. I think for now that will be my questions. For the other one, how often does this project management team meet? On your slide 22, you have challenges that you are referring to. What measures are being undertaken to address or redress those challenges? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Another one. Or is it going to give us another round? Yes, or should we? I don't know, Chair.
Okay, let's give you another one.
The other one, or give us another
okay.
one.
Okay, I'll give you the last one. Okay. We can
it's the last one. It's of interest. Thank you. The general is also here, and the local who's dealing with military veteran issues. The defense review itself doesn't speak much about defense military veterans in terms of how are they capacitated and so on. And in terms of your industry, how do we benefit this military veteran? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Engelberg.
Congratulate the Chief Director that gave us this excellent presentation. It's an exceptionally complex issue, and the way that you did the presentation, putting these complex issues together, I think is really commendable. So well done on that. Mr. Chair, I basically have two questions. The first one is, what if we could just be given a little bit of a background in terms of what was the actual cause for the decline, which is obviously a huge problem in the Department of Defense. And then the second question is, in terms of the financial support that's being requested, like a little bit of a background in terms of what has the funding model been up to now, in terms of maybe averages, has it been coming down, has it been going up, has it been stagnating, if I can just get an idea, an average of what the history has been up to now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Hoshi Tolija.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and I must indeed join the chorus to welcome this presentation, Chairperson. I must also declare that I'm meeting this briefing for the first time as a member of parliament, and I might be one way or another irrelevant or found myself in the bush and realizing that they've got a team of expertise and inspectors, the chiefs, and everybody. And I'm appealing for the indulgence to pick me up with them and walk along with them. Having said so, Chair, there is a lot of uncertainty in this particular program, which they themselves also acknowledge that they are not even sure how long that is going to take them to achieve what they wanted to achieve. But my point, Chair, will be limited to the funding. And they've said, amongst others, they will consider, securing funding outside the national fiscal. I'm sure, yes, I've heard they've said NAMCO, equipment will then be put on sale to augment and have a way to. But I guess NAMCO alone and the budget allocation from the national fiscal is going to scratch at the back of this particular project. It requires a massive resources. If they are going to go all out outside the national fiscal, what compromises are then posed to us as South Africans? Say, let's give an example. They are now going to be sponsored by a particular country. What does that then say to us? Are we still going to exercise our autonomy, exercise our supremacy as a state, or are we going to be told by the funder what to do and what not to do? I'm just, and I'm sure, Chair, I declared upfront that I'm meeting this presentation for the first time. If you found me to be irrelevant, please don't hesitate to say no, I'm out of order. But I think that's the fear. And then I would want them to take me along with them to say, if I gave you my money, and I tell you that buy bottle with them, not Coca-Cola, what would be your role as the owner of the decision to be taken? If I'm going to say to you, with this money, when I'm the one who is having an interest in attacking Iraq, I'm just giving a lousy, loose, kind of example. I'm the man behind attacking Iraq, and I said, I've given you my resources, stay where you are. If you come on my camp, you'll join me. What will be, the South African backbone, after we have been enjoy. There's no free lunch, Chair. The little that has been taught is everywhere you are getting something, there is something that they are looking at you to do. Realizing that our national fiscal success might not in the next 10 years take this to where you wanted it to be. How do you then put measures to control the outside support? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Hoshi. Honorable Happy.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I'm not sure. Perhaps I should welcome the presentation. My daughter is the most chairperson. That if a person happened not to be part of this meeting and you come across this document, I'm honest, Mr. Tyler, you're going to find yourself wanting. My apologies if I differ with what Honorable really what commended you for. I would add an example. If you go to slide number 10, where you are talking about milestone one focus, interventions to ensure the capability and capacity requirements to meet the current defense commitment. If I'm not part of this meeting, I'll ask myself, what commitments or interventions is this going to talk about? You went further to talk more of funding. In fact, I must just say it. What I've heard most is a person appealing for financial assistance. That is what, honestly speaking, that I heard most. From the beginning, there was some stage where I nearly interrupted you and said, can you move? Because you kept on emphasizing one important aspect, funding. But what was more disturbing was when you were supposed to elaborate, what is it that you want? Then you started contacting yourself and saying you are still looking into a funding body. Mind you, we're talking about a review document which was adopted by both the NCOP and the National Assembly last year. You were trying to grab these issues. You started talking about perhaps disposal of non-core items. Yes, indeed, referring to both movable and movable assets. But in this case, a person must ask himself, if I'm not in the military or in the defense, I don't even know what are these assets that you're referring to. And I want to show you, Chairperson, that in most instances, to me, I think as much has been done, but I don't pick it up. In most of the issues that you are highlighting, because in your opening remarks, you emphasize that you want to give the select committee progress report in terms of implementation of the defense review. But what is unfortunate is exactly what was said by Honorable Tobejani. I think we are now two and a half years in Parliament. You see, this is the difficulty of us interacting only at this juncture. I'm not sure perhaps there was once at some stage any appearance of the defense before the convention. On record, I know, I don't recall. And this is the difficulty because we are starting to find each other. And we are already 2 years down the line. Just to cite an example, Chairperson. In slide number 15, you are talking about the exit mechanism under development and is undergoing preliminary consultation with National Treasury and Department of Public Service and Administration. And actually, this committee is a cluster. There's a committee dealing also with issues of public service, which is also constituting of the same members. At no given stage have we ever come across this. Perhaps you need to get clarity. What do you mean by this? Have you started? If not, why not? If you have started, what is the progress to date? You know why am I emphasizing this thing, Chairperson? Yesterday, the minister appeared before the NCOP. And I was one of those people who was really applauding the minister to say, Minister, honestly speaking, if you are saying you are really good in terms of your retention strategy, and she elaborated on how best they are also ensuring that there's joy in terms of the personnel, in terms of retention of skills and expertise, But what I see here, to me, honestly speaking, that is why the concern that was raised by Honorable Shelter. To say, honestly speaking, it would be far more better if we had the minister appearing before us to relate what she said yesterday against what you are hearing before us. Perhaps you'll be able to clarify us if you were part of the meeting yesterday. Cyber warfare strategy development. There was one question posed to the minister. If we share questions that were posed to the minister yesterday, one of it was invasion that took place at the department.
And the emphasis was around safety at the level of the institution. And apart from that, it's a reality. Our country is faced with cyber attack. By virtue that you are participating at the global level, it's also one of the critical challenges. Recent developments, we even applauded the Minister of National Intelligence, Minister Mashoko, to say you are doing well. But how sensitive is the cyber warfare, given what is happening globally? The department is still in a process of developing a cyber warfare strategy. Can we know what is the status to date? If you have, you have. If you haven't started, indicate you haven't started. Everything is very clear. Most of the emphasis that I've heard from the Honorable Tamini, I mean, that and I apologize. It's very clear there's a serious challenge of a mismatch between your operation and resources. But the unfortunate part, you are not so detailed to outline what are these critical challenges that you are faced with. Lastly, for my Chairperson, today is a budget vote presented by the Minister of Finance. And one of the critical challenges that the country is faced with is the economic challenge. And an emphasis for state of nation address and the communities out there is that government will come up with measures, austerity measures, to ensure that we bring our economy to normality. Here you are seated here saying you want more funding. Internally, on the side of the department, what are austerity measures that you have put in place to ensure that you also heed to the call of the president? That would be my submission, Chairperson. Yes,
thank you very much, Honorable Wanda.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation of the report. Most of my questions have been asked, but I want to be specific. My specification is around the issue of the cyber system. For instance, in this 14, the report is saying cyber warfare strategy is in process. My question is, when are they going to present that strategy to the committee? If it is in process, when was it started? My second question, in the personnel, currently, how is the staff establishment in the unit? That maybe they are saying they are shutting off staff. I know everybody in the defense must go for a training. I want those nitty-gritties that as the staff establishment, as per unit, we have got a shortage of so much. Secondly, this report is saying there's a strategic partner. How many strategic partners? Secondly, those strategic partners, what is the defense? What is the beneficiation of the department as per the strategic partners that they are working with? Lastly, I wanted to understand according to what has been Yesterday, the minister was saying they have made inroads in the universities, ne? But here there's a renewal focus. So my question is, what has been replied yesterday? What is the focus that has been implemented? The new renewed focus. Is any document around that? I'm tempted to say, in my own understanding, I'm subject to correction. The question which was asked by my honorable, even yesterday to the minister, and today he is asking, I don't know the answer, but the problem that I had, when he is asking this even today, in my ears there's an echo of our icon, Nelson Mandela, when you are saying, as the leading in the governance, we are not expecting to be given who must be our allies. Because Cuba and Russia, in my own understanding, is always with the allies of the leading organization and governance. So, at any given time, we can be torn down while we're going to Cuba.
Thank you, Honorable Anna. Before I hand over to you to answer this question, I want to make sure that you must understand that you are in front of Parliament. So you can't mislead. If you something that you don't know, just say, I don't know, I'll come with the report later or with the answer later. Don't commit yourself with something that you don't know. I think lastly, that's, if we go to slide number 12, I think it's bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, bullet number 4. It says an accountability and delegation regime that eliminates the current obstacles that inhibit effective command and control. That's what I want to make clear. What are those obstacles? That's all. Thank you. Over to you. You can answer the answer. Over to you, Chief.
Thank you, Chair. I'm struggling to hear your last question. Which bullet was that you were
referring to? Oh, sorry. It's bullet number, slide number 12. Milestone 2 to 4 planning approach. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. It's bullet number 4. And accountability and delegation issue. Get it?
Okay.
Yeah. Then I want to know the current obstacles that from the thank you. You understand my question?
Yes.
Thank you.
But I could choose not to mislead. Thank you very much. Yes, we understand that we're before Parliament and we will not mislead deliberately. There might be a mistake, but we're not intending to mislead deliberately. I'll end with the difficult questions that were excellent for the Minister. But what I can indicate is that at staff level, we did submit, as you know, the government planning cycle. We did make an indication of our requirements, estimates for the defense review during the MTEC process. We are also planning to give them firm figures once we have completed the planning cycle, the planning for milestone one, because we have indicated here that by April we will have a costed plan. Now, National Treasury works on figures. They don't want you to just go to them and say, I want money. They want to know how much. So at a staff level, we've indicated the estimate, but we will be able to engage robustly once we have the costed plan that is based on a credible planning tool. And that takes me to the question on Honourable Member Mkitanga about what are we going to do, because we are indicating here that our plan, the plan for Milestone 1, will be completed by March, April. We have indicated, Ms. Dada indicated in the presentation, that what is in the APP for 2016 are those deliverables that can be executed within budget, within this budget. So the issue then of timing does not arise at this point, because we can execute the 2016-2017 as the current budget. The other question was the training, whether there will be training to ensure successful implementation. Now, again, when you look at the first slide, one of the first earlier slides that Ms. Dada went through about the renewal of this and that, there is also renewal as pay personnel. So the training will be done as and when required, but I can indicate that the DOD, the Defense Force, is capable of executing this. What we just need is funding. And I must indicate, we are expecting Parliament, and we plead with Parliament to support us as we engage with National Treasury. However, we didn't come here, it sounded like we were overemphasizing funding, that was not our plan. We are here to brief you so that you understand where we are, and we will show that again, but we are making clear that we are requesting Parliament to support us as we engage with National Treasury on this very important matter. The streams that we have identified as alternative forms of funding, we have again indicated in the presentation that we understand the economic downturn, we understand that we need resources, we understand the issue of competing requirements on the fiscal, we understand that is why we are working on alternative sources of funding. And there was a presentation at the PCD that we will sweat some of the assets. And if we manage to do that, we will be able to fund the defense review, if we manage to do that. And so we understand the economic downturn very well. Chair.
Sorry, you mean that you are not going to go out of the
country?
Council?
No. We're not expected to be a foreign-sponsored defense force. When we talk about alternative forms of funding, we look within the defense force. Like Mrs. Zanga indicated, the sweating of non-core equipment. We can look at using our facilities at cost recovery. We have very nice facilities for conferencing, for example. We could make that available to other government departments at court. But we're not planning to allow foreign government for sponsoring the defense force. That must be clear. The other, how often does the project management team meet? When we started, when the team was established, we used to meet every Thursday. But we came to a firm base where we could meet every month. So now, but we have a big team, which is most often an oversight over subcommittees. So we could have a planning team, military planning team, and the Secretariat Planning Team meeting as regularly as they can to work on the specific issues. Right now we are working tirelessly because we wanted to meet the deadline for the deliverables that will go into the 2016-2017. So they were meeting more regularly than they would if... So what I can say is that we are meeting as and when required. And the smaller teams
made to perform a task, so they are task oriented. Once the task is finished, then we move to a new step chain. And the defense review does not speak much about military veterans. Yes, it doesn't speak much about them, but I will request, what was the rationale for that? I will request General Gibbs, who was involved in the actual waiting on the defense review, to just give us light on that. But the military veterans, you must remember, they have their own programs that are looking at issues of military veterans and how they can be supported. What has been funding now? Has it been going down? In real terms, yes, the funding has been going down. That's why in the defense review we are actually indicating that if we were funded at a certain percentage, then it could help arrest the decline. So yes, I would ask again General Gibbs to just have an indication, because they did research on this matter. The core and non-core, General Ramaswamy will ask that, will answer that, Chair. Honorable Mohati, on Ms. Ilaga's presentation, I think I've indicated that first we emphasize more, but it wasn't a deliberate ploy to manipulate the committee, but we're making no secret that we do wish for support when we engage with National Treasury on this matter. What we have done on the matter that is on slide 15, that is exit mechanism, I will definitely here indicate that it has started. The draft document was presented to the command bodies. Obviously, we will have to agree on certain principles with National Treasury, and DPSA is involved. So yes, it has started. It is at a stage where we are consulting with them. They might not have come to you with it because it's still at staff, what we call staff, and where we need to agree before we take it to the politicians. The minister indicated what the member indicated as a retention strategy and making our soldiers happy. We do have a number of strategies here. One is technical allowances. We have what we call a occupational salary dispensation as well, which is the brainchild of DPSA. We are implementing that. You also will be aware that we have a number of teams that are looking after certain challenges that were identified. For example, we have the medical task team that was looking after the interests of the doctors, and that is being implemented, that report, Chair. So yes, the minister is right, the retention strategy and trying to keep personnel as happy as possible is being implemented. Obviously, we do have what is in the defense review, where you want to develop a professional soldier, you have a career pathing and so on, which is in process. The mismatch between ordered commitments and resources, I think it's clear. Ms. Lala has been emphasizing that. I think it's more of a comment that there is a mismatch between your ordered commitments and the what is required by the mandate and the available resources. That's why we've been calling for support on this matter. General
Ramaswamy,
I'll start with you, then
General Gibbs
on the other matter
that I've
indicated.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Chairperson. The issue with regard to the core and the non-core, what is being intended here is that before we move through the implementation of the defense review, from the first milestone up to milestone 4 and up to milestone 5, what are those things that you are going to be needing for the defense force that plays a key role in the operationalization, in the deployment, and in the employment of the defense force? And those issues may talk to anything from your movable and immovable assets, etc. As my colleague indicated, that the defense review, that's a subject that is being looked at. For instance, let me give you an example. If we need a piece of land that is there, belong to the defense force, but you don't need it anymore as you move through the various milestones, that will be one of the things. If you need a particular area and you have to establish some additional units in those areas, then you need that. That would form part of your core requirements that you need for the Department of Defense as you move on. So it's basically along those lines, this core and non-core, that will be required for the defense force. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, thank you, and honorable members. Just in response to the question on military veterans, when the Defense Review Committee was established by the Minister, there was a specific terms of reference that was spelled out by the Minister to the Defense Review Committee. And the matter on military veterans was not included as part of the brief. You recall when the Defense Review Committee was started, this was 2011, and I think the military veterans were busy finding their feet in terms of establishing themselves as a department, and I must emphasize a separate department to the Department of Defense. We happen to share the same ministry. The minister is the Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, but at the departmental level, we have a Department of Defense and we have the Department of Military Veterans. So I think it was that technicality. But the urgent and pressing issue at the time was what should the future defense policy for South Africa look like? And on the back of that, the terms of reference were defined. And we had to work within that mandate under the authority of the minister. The second question went about the budget allocation to defense or the appropriation to defense over time. And the analysis done as part of our brief in the defense review was to look at the historical allocation to defense over a number of years, but more particularly over the last, for example, 10 years. And the long and the short of it is that in real terms, the defense allocation has declined. Disproportionately to what has been expected of the Defence Force. So whilst most government departments have enjoyed at least an inflation plus allocation, Defence unfortunately has been on a declining curve in terms of the real value of money. When we drafted the estimates to go to Cabinet for approval, first of all, for the Cabinet approval of the Defence Review, we took the defence trajectory, as you saw this morning, and we provided a cost estimate based on how the committee saw the trajectory being executed over a 20-year time frame. And based on the 2014-15 Rand value at that time, the estimate was then included as a very broad figure in each of the milestones. Cabinet engaged on that estimate and was satisfied that that was reasonable and logical, and that Cabinet would approve the defense review with funding. And that is very, if you look at the minutes of Cabinet, is a very important point. Where we are right now, if I was to say to you, if you were to ask us, what kind of funding does this defense force need going forward? I think when, you know, and a lot of criticism is laid at the fact that over 20 years we need to grow the defense allocation to approximately double what it is now, to really be a sustainable force that can meet its, support South Africa's obligations on the continent and abroad, as well as perform to its constitutional obligations. What that translates to broadly
is a 5% increase in the defense production in real terms year on year for the next 20 years. So it's not like we're going and we're saying to the Treasury, give us 25 billion tomorrow and maintain that allocation over the next 20 years plus. It's not that at all. What we're saying is we need to grow this defense capability, and we need to grow it in a reasonable way, and we need to grow it within the capacity that we have to actually spend it. We need to grow it within the capacity that we have in our current defense industry, and to make sure that our defense industry can upscale itself to the course of this trajectory going forward. So we're not looking at the departments in isolation. This is a far bigger picture than just the departments. And as such, that's the broad estimate. So I would say to you, the broad estimate then being approximately 5% year-on-year real-term improvement in rand allocation in terms of appropriation. So that's where we are with regard to that. But up until now, if you look at the trajectory of the allocation to defence in real terms, it's been declining, and significantly so, whilst our commitments have actually been increasing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question on where are the areas of serious decline. I'll ask the General to answer without compromising the information on combat readiness.
Sorry, you have to explain what is right for us.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. The areas of decline in the defence force, just to be to give the honourable members insight into this decline. Firstly, we are currently deployed, for example, in missions abroad, in the United Nations missions, and we are entitled as a country to be reimbursed for what we contribute. But in terms of equipment, then you find that the reimbursement is not to the level where it must be. And precisely because of the fact that the combat readiness of this equipment is not to the level at which it is required. But we are doing our best as a department to make sure that given what we have, we are able to provide combat ready forces within the challenges, and we are able to manage that. The other thing, honourable members, is the fact that I think an aging defence force, wherein you've got where we would have wanted was to have young and fit, and to have the ability as a defence force to rejuvenate the defence force. And all of these matters have clearly been stated in the defence review itself. Obviously, we have alluded to the areas of skills. I think there were questions that were asked by honourable members with regards to where we do train, etc. And thanks to the honourable member, I see she's not there, who indicated the fact that the engagement as to who the Defence Force engages with and the country, we know that that's a political decision. I mean, as a soldier, I cannot decide today that I must go and engage with Russia. That is clearly a direction that is given at the political level to say South Africa will engage with the following country. So, Chairperson, I think I must indicate those which are the most, they are in the core of the defense review, and the defense review have explained all of these things and the states that the defense force is in a serious state of decline, in particular highlighting certain areas, of which some is what I have just indicated for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. The accountability and command relations model
The Honourable Chair answered a question there, what is it that are the challenges in that area that could obstruct execution of the mandate. I'll request Ms. Dlala to just indicate what is this accountability model that we are looking at.
Chair, if I may, just as directly to the issue of the accountability and command commission, what it speaks to is about Defense Department got basically two roles that it's supposed to execute. There are two main people in the department, or three, by the way. There's a minister who gives political direction to the department. There's a secretary for defense who's responsible for accounting and governance matters and policy in terms of law. And there is the chief of the FNDF who is therefore the commander of the forces, who therefore commands forces in terms of the rules that they apply. But what is important therefore is to create a regime where all the parties are able to find one another in a particular context. Because most of it is an example. In terms of the constitution, it says the commitment of forces is a political direction by the cabinet and the president. The commander in chief commit forces. But the person who's operationally executing the operation is the chief of the SAMDF. And the transition, therefore, of the command from the commander in chief right up to the chief of the SAMDF has got to be properly delineated. It's got to be able to give account to resources that you have used at the level of the accounting officer, be able to prepare the necessary documentation to provide to cabinet, as cabinet and parliament, be able to account to treasury and AG around the utilization of resources. That is what the accounting officer will do. But the SNDF, the chief of the SNDF, must be able, therefore, to give an account of how the operations went through the same particular command. So it's important to create, therefore, a regime that would be able to give expression to all these roles without necessarily undermining the legal intent around them. So it's very essential, because if you don't set up this thing very well, you may find, inevitably, a friction between the minister, the accounting officer, and the chief of the SNDF, and because you have not laid out the rules very well. So the accounting and the command relations regime seeks to basically stick to that particular dilemma. In summary, thank you.
So there are no obstacles around that. What are the obstacles?
Well, the obstacles are, or rather, let me just be careful here. The challenges is that if the commander directs the defense force to operate in a particular country, there is a liaison that happens between the commander in chief and the commander of the force. Red line, as we want to call it. But that red line must therefore take into account the reality of financial accounting that the Secretary for Defense must provide to Parliament, which is therefore the green line. So if you do not therefore ensure that within the green line and the blue line and the red line are properly interfaced, you may have the operation executed to the T. But that can be actually questionable on the basis of the provisions of the PFMA around the issue of accounting and providing necessary reform. And equally, you do not want to create a situation where the Secretary for Defense, therefore, interferes within the command line by actually interfering and breaking the line, the red line between the commander-in-chief and the commander of the forces. So these are our answers to that. Over time, we have realized that there are some challenges around that, hence therefore the requirement to set it out in a policy framework that will hold over time.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, that's Honourable Mohapi, and noted Honourable
Mohapi.
Thank you.
I can indicate that we are following austerity measures.
in line with National Treasury, and where we're not following according to the guidelines, the accounting officer can give an exemption. So we are doing that, using the exemptions allowed. But secondly, we had, even before the National Treasury sent these directives to departments, we had already started a process in which we were looking within our own to see where there are areas of saving, and we were already discussing how we can keep the spending where we could. Like I have indicated, that exploring areas where we could even make our facilities available at cost recovery. So we are implementing that. I don't know whether he wants more specifics than that. We're following National Treasury directives.
Thank you. Ola Mshanga, one sec.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. Chair, on your slide 3, the personal reward. I just want to check. I know personal reward, they're talking about rejuvenation, the arm and so on. I just want to check the issue of your recruitment. How do you manage the recruitment?
Come again?
The recruitment of personnel. How do you manage that? We are looking at the defense to the institution that has a capacity of observing more labor intensive, and moreover, when we are faced with these people challenges of unemployment and so on. How does the defense force or defense review assist us in that regard? The other matter, Chair, that I requested is the time frame, Chair. Actually, not the time frame. Is this a defense review? How are the milestones aligned with the NDP? How are they aligned with the NDP? And the other question, Chair, would be issuing all your index, field size number 3. I have requested to ask the question in terms of the beneficiaries of your military veterans. How do they benefit? And in actual fact, which cover, how do people get access to this index? I know that it was presented last year to with the portfolio committee on defense, but now we must be taken into confidence as the select committee, because some of these members who are in the select committee are not sitting in the defense committee. So I really want you to again take us into confidence with that, with those 3 matters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sanga. Yeah, I'm sure. No, but they are going to explain again, more especially in the military veterans, because I think they dwell that day. Maybe, no, let me let you answer that, because I think you tried to. Yes?
We do understand that the Department of Military Veterans started to be well functioning as of last year,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken. They were still establishing their structure and so on. But the challenge is that they did come that day and present their challenges.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that the budget that comes to defense is one budget and be separated for military veterans and so on. How do we then balance these things? Because these military veterans are saying are not the caterers in terms of their whatever that is expected in terms of the act. And the budget is the defense budget. It's not a budget for military veterans and the budget for money. When it comes from the treasury, it's the defense budget. How do you then
thank you, Snotet. Over to you, Doctor.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, we started by saying we shouldn't mislead. So I wouldn't want to speak on behalf of military veterans. I do not have that information. And I would request that we submit this in writing. I do know that, like the member is indicating, we are facilitating the transfer because it's one budget vote, and then there is
money from that that is transferred to military veterans. But insofar as how they benefit and the access of military veterans to defense industry, I would respectfully request that we take this and provide it in writing. Thank you. The recruitment process in the Department of Defense, obviously, when you are recruiting civilians, you follow the Public Service Act. What is required, you advertise, you go in and look for the best that you can find in the pool of those who apply. In the event that you cannot get what you are looking for, the skill through the normal application process, then you are allowed to go for what they call, what is the word for that? Headhunting. You are required to go for headhunting. But the general is a different process when it comes to the recruitment into the defense force as a soldier. And I'll ask General Ramaswamy to just sketch how that is done. If possible, General, indicate how you balance representativity, the demographics as it is called. Thank you.
Chairperson, firstly, I think I'm going to answer the question in general terms. I was not sure if it is referring specifically to skills or if it is referring to the recruitment of soldiers. But in general terms, I will answer it is that, well, of course, the Defense Force does much to build its own skills from the pool that has been recruited. Once they are in the Defense Force, they are therefore identified to be seen to be fitting certain criteria or certain environments, certain masterings, where further training can be done and they can gain more skills into that. So in other words, we build the skills that we have in most cases as a defense force. Recruiting right at the basic level is done in all provinces in South Africa, wherein there is time that the advertisements are given out for potential applicants to put in their applications. And when those applications come, there is a process of interviewing, but this is done to make sure that in the Defense Force, because it is called the National Defense Force, that it is representative of the demographics of South Africa. And that such a recruitment has taken place in all the provinces of South Africa. And those who are successful are then taken into the Defense Force and are trained in various mastering of the Department of Defense. I'm not sure, Chairperson, I hope I have answered the honorable member. Thank you.
I'm partly covered. My worry is that we are challenged, although this is more political than the minister, but we are challenged of our youth in the country. You know very well. Some have dropped the school on their education. Some, they have concluded, they have finished their matrix, but they are at home not working, they are joining now tracks. And I wanted to just know what is the strategy and the policy that we are using. And second, we must, of course, again, remember that it is not only that you must recruit health and police. Are you not having a module of going to schools and start recruiting from schools? Because that also assists. So I think this will also should be discussed politically with the minister. But I think because we are here, Secretary, we take that to the minister. I think it is very, very advisable to also look at your schools, your recruitment to start at that level. It's very important. Thank you.
Thank you. Want to say something, Doctor?
Not on that one, Chair. We understand the challenges, and when we work on these strategies, we will take that into consideration, but we can also give feedback. There is an official from the Minister here. We can also give that feedback to the Minister. There is one that is left, which is the minister talked about the universities, our focus to universities as well. We do have what we call a university training program,
that as a feeder to the reserve. And our HOC, the head of communications, has been going with the minister visiting universities. So he can say something on that just briefly. But Gerard Ibs, who also is in the reserve force, can add if there is anything to add. HOC?
It's my first time to hear this name, HOC.
Chairperson, thank you very much, Dr. Kamet. Indeed, I think a year ago the minister started a program of an outreach program specifically targeting university students. We've been as far as Northwest Province, where we interact with the students around the opportunities that the African National Defence Force offers. So it's a program that is ongoing within the TUTs and various other institutions in KZN, Northwest, here in Cape Town. So the minister is very passionate about that. But beyond that, if I may add, Chair, last week already, during the Armed Forces Day, we had activities that were leading to the Armed Forces Day, which was on the 21st, for a full week. We were busing children from schools to expose them to the South African National Defence Force and the career thereof. So those kids were from grade 10 to grade 12, to making sure that they're exposed to the careers in the Defence Force, they understand what the Defence Force is, and they have access to the Defence Force. In the REM show, which takes place in Southgate, we also have similar career activities around students being exposed to the SANDF. So there's a range of activities within the DOD that we do provide to the South African young people, which are led both by the Minister and the Department of Defense, as General Ramazan has said. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, General.
My excellent. I think the question, or the emphasis of the question, was on the word renewed focus on the University Reserve Training System or training program. This was a program that the minister sanctioned a few years ago and has largely been run as a pilot project within the organization. Let me explain just very briefly the detail around it. What the program seeks to achieve is to attract professional skills into the Defence Force, and it seeks to do this through accessing undergraduates at the level of university and the number of universities that are involved. The intention was there'd be at least one university in each of the provinces that would participate in the program, and it hasn't quite got there yet because, as I said, it's a pilot program. But the initial indications are enormously beneficial and successful program. So the emphasis then from the minister is saying you must renew your focus on this. This is something that we can look at as a viable project going into the future. Essentially what it does is it takes undergraduates at university levels, selected from a wide range of professional skills and professional qualifications, and it trains them, and we train them in junior leadership, military junior leadership and basic military skills as they are studying. And we don't disrupt the academic program at all. But as they study, we train them in the military sciences and of course the military leadership requirements. Synchronized with their graduation at the university would then be their commissioning as officers, as young officers, into the National Defence Force, whereupon they would then be placed either in the regulars, which is the permanent force, or in the reserve force. The University Reserve Training Program is not restricted to reserves. It's running in the reserve capacity because they are not full-time soldiers. They are full-time students. And they use their vacations and some of their weekends to undergo this training. But as I say, it's enormously successful. The first lot of young graduates are awaiting their commissioning, if they haven't been commissioned yet. I know that was on the cards. And the minister is suggesting that we pursue this as a very viable project going into the future to attract these professional skills in the Defence Force and to enhance the leadership, the junior leadership of our organisation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General.
Honourable Member, let me take this opportunity.
Yes.
Of
alignment.
Of this.
So,
yeah.
I asked the alignment whether it is current aligned with your
health. Oh, yes. 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 Thanks. Yeah, you're quite right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, for reminding me.
Chair, it is aligned with the NCP. We are also looking at when we analyze them, there are areas of misalignment. We still have an opportunity to negotiate that with the NCP. But I'll ask Mr. Sender to elaborate a bit about how they work with the NCP. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on,
thank you, Chairperson. When the Minister appointed the Defence Review Committee to do this work, part of the stakeholder analysis at that time was to engage with the commissioner and the portfolio commissioners in writing the National Development Plan, because the Defence Review and the National Development Plan being written at the same time. So we had a number of formal engagements, both between the two respective chairpersons and between two selected people from the Planning Commission that were tasked by the Planning Commission to work with us. So you'll find in the National Development Plan it's almost silent on defence matters. It speaks to other security matters, but and etc. And so they were done in parallel, but there was an ongoing consultation with the respective people that they were happy with our work and etc. And so there is alignment, and this is my own interpretation. It is the other chapter of the that is was right there, because they were written in parallel at the same time. So they came through the approval process at the same time as well. So that alignment, both at the level of the chairpersons and the work that was done in the different commissions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mahathir.
Parallel can never mean alignment.
What is that?
Parallel can never mean an alignment.
Can you?
I'm saying.
Yes.
What the honourable chief is trying to say, that they are moving in parallel. I'm saying anything that is parallel is not aligned.
It is parallel. can you comment, chief officer?
You're right. Parallel means parallel.
Yes.
But he indicated that because of the recognition or appreciation that these courses were parallel, that's why there were this consultation, so as to make sure that whatever.
With due respect, you know, this is the first of all, if you don't have the answer, ask the chairperson to be the best deck or any competent person. I understand you are from defense, anything you have are all means to defend. But in this case, honestly speaking, I would suggest go there. It was the call for consent. I don't think when the Honourable was asking a question, it was just a mishap that he did ask a question. There's a particular angle that is directing. So I'm just saying, if you don't have the immediate answer, there's no harm. That is say, if you go there, we'll give a written submission on this.
Thank
you. All right, we'll give it a response on this one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we close, I'd like to introduce that we have two chairpersons here in this meeting. Honourable Khoshi Tobijan is the chairperson of what we call it, PPC and Executive Undertaking. And then next to him, Honourable Mohabi is the chairperson of COPTA. In COPTA, we're talking about public service and administration is there, women and president is there, it's a big cluster. So we have those chairpersons within us. On that note, I would like to ask Honorable Engelberg to give a thanks to defend delegation. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much, and ladies and gentlemen,
You all have these fancy titles and these very fancy things on your shoulders. So you are very, you have really honored us with your presence here today. Thank you to the Major General, the Brigadier General, the Chief of Staff, Chief of Departments, and also thank you very much for your delegation. It was indeed, this is indeed a very, very challenging and complex topic, and in a very, very short space of time, we have attempted to explain some of the challenges that you are experiencing. So thank you very, very much for your time and trying to teach us and inform us of your challenges, and we really wish you well. We need a strong Department of Defense, and our trust is in you, and we will from our side try and facilitate your needs as far as possible. Thank you very much, and a good trip safe back up.
Thank you. Before I close again, you know, Honorable Tobejane, he is also the president of Contra Lesson. Is Hoshi Tobijan. So we have to respect that. Before we close, I would like to ask some few words from you, Hoshi. Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson, and thanks for the Departments of Defense and Security for briefing us about the defense review. We hope working together would achieve what we want to achieve. Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. I think the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go to the next one.
Come on.